Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step.
Today on the podcast, I am joined by Jason Valatin from Redding, California. He's a pastor, an author, a speaker, a podcaster. And I remember hearing Jason Valatin's story about in 2014. And I remember hearing, like, I've never heard someone, a pastor, talk about emotional health in the church. And I think that wasn't like necessarily an Australian thing, but it was kind of new. I think around 2014, people were starting to get really authentic and honest about their stories. And I remember you getting up there, Jason, and sharing so honestly about a season in your life that you'd walk through. And yeah, but thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a privilege. I love just sharing things in my life that were super painful that can now be really helpful for other people. I mean, that feels like the gift of being human, right? Is you get to help someone else figure out how to win. And yeah. It oftentimes in a place where you wanted somebody to help you, you know? So It's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And I think because you're a well-known leader and your dad's very well-known, and growing up as a pastor's kid, I think I notice, and it's something when you are in leadership, it's like hard to actually be honest and be like, I'm struggling, but I'm also leading you. And I just think that you bring such power to an authenticity to your story and owning your story. But for our listeners, in a nutshell, love to hear about your story, like how you know, your book is called The Supernatural Power of Forgiveness. And it's obviously, you know, that title kind of says it all, like you obviously needed to forgive someone. So I'd love to kick us off and just give us a nutshell of your story.
Yeah. And just so there's an updated version now called Winning the War Within.
I thought I saw that. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, which is great. It's no worries. Yeah. So I grew up in a Christian home, you know, went to church from probably the first week I was born. I don't know. My whole life, had a great family. My parents were really, really awesome. And I dealt with a lot of stuff growing up, just personally. You know, I struggled with addiction at a young age. Masturbation specifically from 10 to 16 years old, and pornography at a young age, 14 to 16. And kind of the stuff that, that, you know, normal human beings struggle with. And I got free of all that stuff at 16, which was really great. Wow. And found my high school sweetheart at 16. 16 was a big year for me.
Yeah.
A lot of great things
Freedom and love.
Yeah, that's true. I got engaged at 17 in high school, and I grew up in a very small town. And so it's kind of what you do, you know, that I didn't know that the rest of the world existed, almost literally. Like I'd never been outside of California, I don't think. We did mission trips to Mexico, but I just had such a small worldview, which is fine. It was the way that I preferred to live. And got married at 18 and had my first son at 19 years old, and three kids by the time I was 24, and a vasectomy at 24 to just wrap it all up.
Yeah.
And life was good, you know, hard, but good. And just doing normal, you know, for those people who are married, I mean, marriage is an up and down journey. No one goes into marriage and just absolutely crushes it, but it was an up and down journey. And, in 2006, I started to notice a change in my marriage. Things were harder than they had been before. And, just connection in general, connection was harder. There was more distance. And long story short, I ended up in 2007, finding out that my wife was having an affair, and she ended up leaving, and I became a single dad of our three kids. And, you know, the challenge when there's lots of challenges, for starters, mm-hmm. single parenting is, it has to be the hardest job in the world, because there's not a possible way that you can meet your kids' needs, give mm-hmm. them everything they need, and take care of yourself. It just doesn't exist. You know, mm-hmm. raising kids with two parents in a home is incredibly hard, but doing mm-hmm. it on your own. So for those single parents out there, you know, you should really celebrate how hard you're working and what you're doing. And it was just the grace of God that yeah. honestly got me through that season and community. So I was a single dad for 5 years, and got remarried in 2011. So I went from 2007 to 2011, you know, single, raising kids and doing that. Yeah. But that really started a journey in my life. When I went through my divorce, because I was a pastor on staff at Bethel Church at the time, I helped to oversee Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry on in first year. I'd been there for mm-hmm. 4 years, around 4 years. And, you know, going through a divorce doesn't really help your credibility.
Yeah.
You know,
but I'm sure the single girls would have been like, he's single. And you're like, yeah, because I know what girls are like in the church. So how is that?
Well, honestly, it was one of the most incredible times of my life. Yeah.
That's weird. Like you're trying to be a dad, but then also these girls are hanging around. That would have been a lot.
Yeah, it was. It was crazy. And Christian women are the craziest too. So
they are. And I'm a Christian woman, yeah. So I know.
Yeah. So no, it was like being on The Bachelor, but
yes.
In a church. And now mostly it was just fun. It was a good season of my life. I really enjoyed that side of, you know, being in relationships, starting over again. But nothing really happened until I healed myself. You know, yeah. That's the truth is, there's no point in getting into relationship unless you're coming in healed. You know, there's no point in taking all my baggage and giving it to somebody else. So that was the journey. So from 2007 to, you know, 2009, I walked through pain, mm-hmm. walked through forgiveness, raised kids, rebuilt, you know, healed, did all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And just to kind of paint a picture for our audience, I mean, you're so on the other side. I'll let our audience know you remarried Lauren, who's so beautiful. And then you have two extra kids with them past the vasectomy, which is like yeah. such a great story. I think everyone should check out your podcast with Lauren called Mates, Dates, and Babies to hear all of that story. But to paint a picture of how did pain manifest in that time? Because I've gone through a betrayal, which is obviously you went through a betrayal, and you kind of don't know like how it affects you until probably you're reacting a certain way. But what did pain kind of look like for you?
That's a great question. Instant anger, right? Because you feel so powerless. Yeah. And I mean, the desire to get revenge, you know, is just massive. Yeah. And lots of judgment. Yeah. I'd say a lot of judgment, a lot of aggression. So those are all things that I, you know, instantly had to work through. The problem with pain is it has a voice, right? Pain says, fix me now. Do whatever you have to do to fix me right now. That's a very, very dangerous thing. Because we make short-term decisions that have long-term effects if we're not careful. And so I just had to realize right away, I'm in a ton of pain. And I mean, I literally said that to myself, I mean, several days, you're in a lot of pain right now. You need to be careful. Mm-hmm. You're in a lot of pain right now. You need to be smart. You're in a lot of pain right now. You know, so I had some really, really tight boundaries for myself that included going to bed at 9 o'clock and, you know, not texting women and, mm-hmm. you know, all this kind of stuff just to help me, right? I'm a dad of three kids. I'm a pastor. I'm a counselor. Like I have to do things in such a way that I'm proud of myself. And that became the standard. Like, not just is God proud of me, but am I proud of me? Am I proud of the decisions I'm making? And am I going to be an example for my kids who are someday going to go through their own type of pain? Hopefully not the same kind, but I want to be able to look back at my life and go, hey, this is the standard. This is what we do. You know, this is what I did in my divorce. And so that was at the forefront of my mind, but yeah, lots of pain, lots of, the other thing that happens with pain is you don't often know what is your desires and what is just the pain. So a really funny story is, I had a vehicle that was starting to get wore out, and it was right after my divorce. I was talking to my friends and my dad about, I want to get a different vehicle. You know, I need to get a new vehicle. And it's so embarrassing, but I was like, I'm going to get a Mini Cooper. And
my dad and you're said, really tall. So Mini Cooper.
Tall, and I have three kids, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just so unpractical. And like, when I look at it now, if somebody likes Mini Coopers, bless you. I don't even like a Mini Cooper. But yeah. I think it just looked so exciting and looked so fun. Mm. And my dad, my family was so great. You know, my dad was like, I'm thinking more like an SUV, buddy. Like, you know, Mini Cooper might be fun for a day, but you couldn't put one of their kids' friends in it. You couldn't drive any other kids besides yours. And it's those things, right? But so what feels exciting in the moment when we're in a bunch of pain isn't often what we really want. It's what I want right now in the moment. Mm. And so it's a very tricky thing to go through.
Because
you have to really trust other people besides yourself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that like what you're talking about, it's like, it's not the Mini Cooper, it's what the Mini Cooper represents. And so we're looking for, some sort of resolve. That's so interesting. So you mentioned the word, I think powerlessness has probably been the biggest thing that I've personally had to overcome in my life. What felt powerless for you, being a single dad and walking through a divorce?
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm responsible to raise kids, one on my own, which is an incredible feat. And two, kids that are induced with pain. So pain that I can't stop. It's everyday pain. It's, you know, we share kids half the week. So half the week they're at my house, half the week they're at her house. And I don't get to decide what she does at her house. I don't get to decide who's over there, how she talks, you know, how another guy talks, and how they dress and how they're taken care of. And, so, you know, that was a lot of the pain, a lot of the frustration for me was wrapped up in, I now am responsible to protect, to provide, to promote these kids that I actually can't protect half the time. I can't take care of. And at least in the way that I wanted to. Yeah. So that became very challenging. And just powerless to, you know, I mean, you make vows to somebody that you can't keep. And not because I didn't want to. I mean, I didn't have a choice in it. So that's a very powerless thing, right? You give everything to somebody who doesn't want you. That's a very powerless thing. So, you know, you have to really sit with yourself and work through all of that pain. You know, you have to work through, was somebody else better than me? Does somebody else know how to love better than I know how to love? Am I the root cause here? You know, why wasn't I enough? So those are all things that you have to take head on, you know, or you run from them, and but you just can't ever escape that. You know, the only other option is to numb so much that you know you don't feel.
Yeah, which is what a lot of people do because they don't, you know how to necessarily process these big emotions. So, so walking through that, like I can imagine, I'm just curious to know, because a lot of powerlessness, we reach for any sort of control. Like how did you, I mean, especially when I can imagine with kids involved, like how did you, work through control. I know for me, I would be wanting to manage everything to make everything okay. So yeah, how did you work through control?
Yeah. So I think that sometimes we look at how we compensate as like a bad thing, but there are survival mechanisms that are really helpful. You know, it's like, it's proven that if you're really stressed out and you start to clean, that it lowers your anxiety and your cortisol levels. And like God designed that, you know, we start organizing our life and all of a sudden we feel like it's manageable. And so for me, control, it looked a lot like, I mean, honestly, the only way that I really got rid of it was by learning how to work through pain. That's the only thing that really worked for me. And everything else that I did was so that I could get enough energy to work through pain. So I did a lot of jet skiing that year. I did a lot of bicycling that year, you know, cycling, road cycling. I did a lot of hanging out with friends and because I did a lot of processing pain. And that's one thing that I figured out right away. I mean, the first week that she was gone, I remember sitting on my bed feeling, this is where I felt the most out of control. I had all this pain. Every happy memory in my life is now a painful memory. Every one of them. I've been married 10 years and we were together 2 years before that. So 12 of, you know, the 25 years of my life or 26 years of my life, 12 of them are so painful, 27 years of my life. And every thought, every good memory, our wedding day to, you know, having babies together, our honeymoon, none of it's happy anymore. And that just feels like a prison because now you're trapped inside of yourself where all this pain is. And so I just remember the first day after she left, knowing that I'm going to have to figure out a plan for this because you can't ignore it, but that's not going to make it go away. I can't outrun it. I can't give it away. You know, I can't get revenge. That doesn't work. So I got to somehow figure out how to deal with all this. So that, I mean, that's what I did.
Wow. So you, I mean, cause I don't think many people were really talking about how to process pain back then. So there was obviously something in you that knew that like, I have to actually feel this. And was there any sort of guidance outside of you in kind of learning to actually feel the pain and process the pain?
You know, it's funny because there may have been. I honestly don't remember one conversation of anybody going, this is how you process pain. It's really, really interesting. No, I feel like the process that I was given was divine. It was just, you know, the Holy Spirit walking me through it or God walking me through it, you know, helping me through each step. And I had spent a lot of time as a counselor helping people in my past, but I think part of it was I had the language to talk through pain, but I didn't have a great process yet created and crafted because I had never really been through a bunch in my life. So it really forced me to think through like, what is the A to Z process and how do I walk that out? Because I think that coming from a church background, people in the church, we love our theory. You know, we love theory. We love, how are you doing? I'm doing great. You know, my marriage isn't good, but you know, God's good. Hallelujah. Or people say all the time, like, you know, you just need to give that pain to God. And, but they don't really have a clue of what they're really saying. Like, what the heck does that mean? Give your pain to God. Because if you give something away, right? I mean, if you gave me $100 and then you walked away and you still had that $100, like you really didn't give that to me, but we do that stuff with God all the time. Or I just, you know, I nail it to the cross. And, but if you can't really tell me what it means to nail something to the cross or to give it to God and you're still left with it, then you really just have, you have hope, maybe you have hope that, that somehow it will happen, but you don't have a real process. And so I think my brain works really practically like that because of what I've done for a living. And so that's where I just started down the process of going, how do I work through this pain? How do I get to the other side of it in a way that is repeatable? I can do it over and over and over again because I had a lot of pain to work through.
Yeah. Yeah. You share a story, and I heard on our friends, Justin and Abby's podcast, you spoke about just a practical example of feeling the pain. I think you were probably at the school of ministry, and then I don't know if, I mean, I could be butchering the story and you could tell it, but that you had memories coming forward. Because I think, I know when you have like memories, it's either you want to hang out in fantasy, maybe this person will change their mind and come back around, or you kind of want to shut it down and like just feel the rage, I can imagine. So you share a story about how you processed a memory. And like you mentioned, would you be able to share that story?
Yeah, I will. You know, so the part of that story comes from my process of working through pain. So what I realized quickly is that pain is a gift that leads to comfort. It leads to healing. It leads to becoming new. And, you know, James chapter 1 says, consider it pure joy or hilarious laughter when you encounter trials of various kinds. For the testing of your faith produces perseverance, and when perseverance runs its course, you will lack nothing. And Matthew says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And, you know, Bible says, those who sow with tears will reap with joy. I mean, there's just all kinds of verses in the Bible that talk about the blessing of mourning. So you can make a conclusion that if you don't mourn, that it's actually a curse, right? Like to not be able to mourn is this curse. It's suffering. It's ongoing suffering. And so, I realized right away that if mourning is a blessing, then I have to learn how to mourn. And so for me, there's like a 5-step process that, is it okay if I take us through that process?
I would love it. This is great.
So that 5-step process, and I'll make it pretty quick, but that's where I got to that story. So the first step in processing pain is actually acknowledging that you're in pain, which may sound really stupid, but you can't process anything that you don't acknowledge. You can't solve anything that you're not willing to acknowledge. And so to me, that's the first step. Step two is, you know, you're going to process one thought, one memory, or one moment. You're not going to process everything at once. The problem with trying to process everything at once is that you never close the loop on anything. And your brain works hard to close loops, even if you lie to your, even if you have to lie to yourself. That's why like 50% of your recall is, it's only, your recall is only 50% accurate. It's because what you remember from the past isn't necessarily what happened from the past, but your brain goes back and finishes the story. We don't like a story undone. And so that's part of the rumination process. You know, what if I would have done this? And what if I could have done that? And what if this would have been different? We have a hard time just leaving facts as facts. And so, I love to sit with one thing, one moment, one memory. And when I'm processing pain, the challenge that Christians have is we like to start out with forgiveness. We like to start out with by saying, I forgive you for everything that you've done. And I'll just say, forgiveness has levels to it. The first one would be a choice, right? Like if you decided to hit me, I can choose to forgive you, and that's great. That would be the first level. But there's a level that is much deeper than I choose to forgive you. The level that's deeper than that is I want to forgive you, right? So I actually have compassion inside of me. Well, in order to get to that part, you know, when you've been wronged a ton, molested, taken advantage of, whatever, lied to, there's so much injustice that happens. There's a lot of pain and anger. And if you don't process that, if you don't have a time to actually get out and explore, what is this pain? What is, put a voice to it, then you just shove it down. So when we're able to look at one thing, one memory, one moment, one thought, you give it and sit with it. You give yourself the opportunity to say whatever you need to say. So that's the part in step two that Christians have a really hard time with, because in order to be honest, I give this example quite a bit. Like one of the first, one of my first clients that I ever helped unlock his emotions, he didn't know how to cry anymore, which people get to that place where they're so locked up, they don't know how to access their emotions. I had him bring me back to one of his earliest childhood memories, and it was his dad who had tied his brother to a tree and beat him with rubber hoses. So that's his early memory. And so I'm having him close his eyes and he's talking to his dad, and I'm telling him, I want you to tell your dad how that made you feel. And he's going, you know, just, it makes me feel real sad. You know, it's really frustrating to not help my brother. You could tell there's a chasm between what really happened and what he's saying. Does that make sense? Like, can you imagine your husband taking your kid and tying him up to a tree and beating him with rubber hoses? Like, you wouldn't be like, I feel really sad right now. This feels really confusing. You would be like, F you.
Yeah, rage. You.
Rage. Yes. You're evil. Now, it's not where we want to stay. It's not a commentary on your character. It's a commentary on what you feel in the moment, right? And so to be able to say in step two, like, I'm processing honestly. I am honestly looking at the pain and allowing the judgment to come, allowing the anger to come, allowing the rage to come, and I'm getting it out. Because what I really want is I want to get below the surface. And so one of the first memories I had was of my wedding day, of course, right? It's one of the most beautiful days of any person's life, but it's one of the most painful in a divorce. And so I remember being, these memories just catch you off guard. I wasn't trying to have the memory. It just came. I was in first year school ministry. I was up on stage, just honestly, just laying by where the artists paint. And I was trying to like, just recover. And all of a sudden I had this memory of my wife. She's walking down the aisle. And of course I'm crying because it's sad. There's a lot of pain in it. And then I realized worship's almost over. And I'm bawling. At this point, I'm a mess. So I jump up off the stage and I go down the stairs and I run up to my office and I get my computer out. I turn off all the lights and I get my journal out and I put on sad music that matches my mood, because I'm going into mourning. I'm not listening to happy praise music. I'm not happy. And I start processing my pain. And now what happens is, you're going to get to this spot in step two where you cry so much and you say so much that there's not much left. And that's the place where you want to get to, because that's where you start to find a theme. So that's step three. Step three is you take this theme. Now, my theme that day, when I was watching my wife walk down the aisle, I had all this anger, all this judgment, of course. How could you? Why would you? How dare you? How selfish? I hate you. Right. And I'm writing it all in beautiful language. But at some point I found myself saying, what do I do with my vows? And who's going to love me? Who's going to want me? Who's going to want somebody that, I mean, my wife didn't want. What do I do with these vows that I gave? Like, I literally don't know what to do with them. And what do I do with my innocence? Because I no longer feel innocent. I feel used or broken. I felt broken. I felt damaged. I just want people to hear this. That's where the actual pain, was coming from in that memory.
Yes.
If I didn't get to those questions, if I didn't actually answer those questions, the pain would still get there. So I could say, I hate you, F you, you're horrible, how dare you? And a lot of people stop there and they don't close the loop. The loop is what's actually driving the pain. Not just what's the pain making you feel. But most people don't know what's driving the pain. So they get to F you, I hate you, you're horrible. And then you feel a release, but you didn't solve anything. And so it starts back over with, once you get triggered again, right? Have another memory of my wife, I go back to, oh my gosh, my wedding day, how dare you, how could you, I hate you. Because in my mind, I'm still damaged goods. I'm still somebody that I don't know how to keep my vows. I still don't know if I'm lovable. Those are all, that's all the pain points right there in that one. So that's where you get to step four. Step four is you have to take it to God. This is how you take it to God, right? I've already said, I hate you. I've already got all the, there's no more tears to cry. Now this is what I need answered. So when I bring God something very specific, God, what do I do about my vows? I remember when he answered that question for me. I literally can remember the relief of him going, Jay, this is what I want you to do. I remember him giving me the relief of, hey, I said, God, like, I don't feel lovable. Who's going to love me? I remember him answering that question for me.
Wow.
It was like 1,000 pounds was lifted off me. Now, my need at this point has been met. My need's been met. I don't have a need here anymore. Because even if she could have come back, even if she would have come back and said, I'm so sorry, I wish I wouldn't have done that, she couldn't give me back the things that were now broken and stolen.
Yes.
So even her apology didn't fix these things. This is actually stuff that only God can give me back. That's why it's so important that you go through this process. So, but when he goes and he fix those, he answers those, he gives me a promise, now I have tons of compassion. So from that place, step five is, Holy Spirit, will you show me how you see her? How you show me how you see my ex-wife? I got a bunch of different pictures because I did this hundreds of times.
So
the picture, you know, lots of pictures, maybe when she was 3 years old. When I'm looking at that three-year-old and I'm seeing her life and how she was raised, honestly, I just want to love her. I just want to care for her. I understand. It doesn't make it okay, but I understand. Like, I get it. So from that place, all the stuff I wrote down, how dare you, how could you, that's where I go and I start saying, I forgive you. I forgive you for. I forgive you for this. I forgive you for that. I start turning over. Forgiveness is not a blanket. See, when we come into, when we get saved, we typically pray the sinner's prayer, which is, you know, which usually consists of something like, Lord, would you come into my life? Would you take away my sins? And I choose to forgive those who have wronged me because you forgave me so much. Now, I don't mind the prayer on this from the standpoint of the genuine heart cry of, I really do want to forgive everyone. And I really do want you to forgive me. Okay. We just have to realize that it's one level, because people take that and they use it like a blanket to throw it over their life. And then they go back home and on Monday morning, they wake up and they still have the same pain from being not wanted as a kid and being left and being abandoned or being molested, or, and they don't realize, like, I thought I got saved. I thought I got a new heart and a new mind. Well, forgiveness isn't a blanket. You don't throw it over your whole life. It's a tool that, again, level one, great. You want to forgive everyone in your life? Perfect. That's a great starting point. But at some point, you have to process the pain of what you went through, because otherwise, you'll go back to, what does the 8-year-old say who was molested? I mean, if you never gave that young girl or young boy a voice, or the 10-year-old or the 16-year-old girl that was talked into sleeping with her boyfriend and felt tons of peer pressure and then wasn't wanted after that, like, she has something to say. Why wasn't I good enough? Why didn't you protect me? Why didn't you care for me? And that really affected the way that she saw herself in the world and in how her dad handled that and how her mom handled it. I mean, there's just so much pain, right? And so if you don't, then that's where your trauma is all locked up, is you're reliving the past because your past is actually unfinished. It's unprocessed. So you just live it over and over and over again, which is part of where the anxiety comes. So we can't use forgiveness in a way that it wasn't designed. So for me, we have to use forgiveness in partnership with processing pain, with mourning, not a stand aside tool. And so, you know, for me, that's the best, most clean way to process pain. Once I did a couple, once I sat through a couple different like times of processing pain, I actually started to love it. It's, it's a crazy thing because I really looked forward to it. I looked forward to like, I'm kind of a, I'm a writer. I'm an artist. I was a poet for a while. I like digging in to the depths of my heart and exposing it in a good way. Like I just felt like I felt so much love because I felt like I knew me. I understood. I'm not abandoning me. And God's not. But I first have to know me and see me and understand. That's my responsibility. And so I think in the processing pain, I just felt so known and cared for and loved by me first. And then the world around me could do the same because I actually knew where I was at and what I needed. So the nice thing about that process, I processed hundreds of thoughts. I've never processed the same thought twice. It's just so clean. Wow. Yeah, it's really thorough.
And you're really highlighting and actually giving practicality to that James 1 scripture where it says, consider it joy. And you're saying it's a joy to feel pain. And I think also because your body releases the pain, even chemically. So you do get that natural chemical reward when you're met with love in that, which is so powerful. And I love like that you're actually digging deeper into the root of the pain. Like you're actually digging into not lovable. And they even say that a lot of addiction comes from the core root belief of I'm not good enough and not lovable. And I love this process that you're talking about because it's talking about actually addressing the real core wounding, which is so powerful. Like part of like processing, because basically you're talking about processing triggers. And I love that you're talking about forgiveness isn't a blanket, like it's a process. And I think because obviously we feel someone is indebted to us, they owe us something or they took something from us. So it's really important to look at that debt. But I just wonder, and this is kind of shifting gears because I know a lot of in processing triggers and you've become so articulate in saying exactly what you need. And so you feel deeply known by yourself and known by God, which is Psalm 139. But I've heard you talk about needs, and that is such a key component to like working through triggers is understanding what you need, whether it's from the other person or what's happening, what you need from yourself or from God. And I've heard you sort of talk about like in your marriage sort of, or your first marriage, not having needs. And I think that I find a lot of women can talk about their needs or be needy. And I don't want to be too general, but like it's actually refreshing hearing it from a guy, like how to articulate your needs. And I coach and counsel a lot of guys as well who will be really nice guys. They're really nice guys, but I've heard it described, there's a difference between a nice guy and a good guy. And sometimes the nice guy won't have boundaries, won't have needs, be easy, don't rock the boat. I'd love you to speak to like your journey with understanding your needs to hopefully give language to anyone listening to kind of figure out, that's validating. I need that too. Yeah. So yeah, love you to share that.
Yeah. So, I mean, without needs and without boundaries, there's no way to actually feel loved and cared for. There's no relationship that has real care and real love in it because, you know, It's in you knowing my need. It's in you understanding my boundaries. Your boundaries aren't a way to keep people out. They're a way to keep the relationship healthy. And so every relationship, every healthy relationship has lots of needs and lots of boundaries in it. That's why, you know, it really is no such thing as being needy. All of us have tons of needs. There's such thing as being desperate and overbearing, but we all come to the table with tons and tons of needs. I mean, we have thousands of needs every single day, from, wow, I'm getting tired of standing, to, oof, I'm getting tired of sitting and I think I need to run right now, to, I'm hungry. Wow, I'm irritable. I don't want to keep having this conversation. I need a little bit of a break. Like, we are constantly monitoring our needs constantly, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. And so the first thing that we want to do is we want to use self-awareness. We want to make what's unconscious conscious. And, you know, most of our thoughts are in the unconscious realm. I'm not even thinking to you what I'm going to say next. It's literally just happening. And your brain is so incredible. So our brain automates processes to make them easier, so we don't use as much brain power. If you think about anytime you do something new for the first time, driving a car, remember the first time you drove a car? It's incredibly challenging. It's exhausting. You're thinking about all these things while also the consequences of all those things. Now, if I'm not careful, I will have my Instagram app open while I'm eating, while driving my car, because my brain has automated all of those processes. It's frightening. Don't do that, by the way, but you can. And we all work to not do that kind of stuff. So what the downside of the automation process is, you have a need and your brain automatically sends it before you actually consciously know that you're doing that. So you walk into a room, you feel insecure, and your brain goes, these are stupid people. Well, you don't even know that you did that, but you've done it for so long that when you walk in a room and you feel insecure, your first thing is to judge the people in the room instead of to go, oh, I feel really insecure. What's going on? I'm just giving an example. Or, you know, my wife comes home and I see her and I'm afraid. Oh, what's going on? If I am self-aware, I go, oh, my wife walked in the door and I'm afraid and feel defensive. What's going on? I can fix it. If I don't know, if I'm not aware of that, then the first thing she says to me, I'm probably going to say something back in a way that makes her not want to talk. I'm trying to protect myself. Well, it's my worldview. It's my view of her. It's that, but that's saying something to me. It says, I'm afraid. I'm afraid she's going to hurt me. I'm afraid she disapproves of me. I'm afraid that she sees me like I see me. Okay. So self-awareness is the key. Self-awareness. I'm not becoming introspective. I'm not going, what's wrong with me? I need to have the ability to go, what's happening with me? I have to check the weather. I have to be able to. Because if you don't, then you have no feedback. You have no way of getting real feedback. And feedback is the mother of learning. You can only grow to the level of feedback that you can handle. Yeah. So if you're not giving yourself any feedback, then you're literally just going to stay in the same patterns and habits. So when you're trying to figure out your needs are most often found in the pain points of your life. Think about it like that. Like, when you wake up in the morning, you eat because, well, you have a tiny bit of anxiety, a tiny bit of pain. And you know, like, this day is not going to go good if I don't eat, at least for me. I feel pain. When I run a long ways and exercise, I have a bit of anxiety around water. I just notice it. Like, I got to get some water now. We all know what that feels like, to go, I need some water right now. And that's prompting your brain to go and find a solution. Okay. The same thing happens when you go throughout your day and let's say work's not going as good as you want it to, and you feel a little bit hopeless. You're like, oh man, I'm a business owner. This isn't going to, okay. Hope has a need attached to it. If you don't recognize that you're hopeless, then I go crack a beer. I go crack a beer to just feel a little bit better. I don't know. I go chat a woman, or I go and there's a lot of good ways and bad ways to cope with that. The main thing is, why I don't like it to be automated is because I want people to make a conscious choice. Do I want to scream at my wife right now? Or how do I want this conversation to end?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you make life decisions conscious, you can begin to articulate the need. especially if you partner, what's the emotion I'm feeling? So we connect through our emotions. We don't connect through facts. Connection happens through the exchange of emotions. So, there is some connection in a fact. You know, your mom called today. Oh, great. What did she say? She said that, you know, she wants to come over tonight. Oh, awesome. But when we're talking about feeling known, feeling seen, feeling cared for, feeling shared experiences, it's in the emotion. It's in the exchange of emotion. Mm. When my kids come and run up to me and they say, Dad, it's in that exchange of emotion that I actually feel cared for from them. Yes. If I just saw my kids every day and they said, hi, Dad. Well, because there's a lack of emotion, there's also a lack of connection. And so when you go throughout your day and you're looking at your core emotions, right? The ones that your fear, your shame, joy, loneliness, sadness, whatever. When you start to go through your emotions, that's where your needs start to lie. We are a body, a soul, and a spirit. Mm. So sorry, I'm trying to give like a ton of content quick.
I love it. It's so good.
Think through your body, your soul, and your spirit, and think through your inside of your soul would be your mind, will, and emotions, right? So your soul has needs, your body has needs, and your spirit has needs. Inside of your soul, think about your emotions. Mm. So your mind, will, and emotions. Well, I feel tired. Well, I feel lonely. Well, I feel angry. Well, I feel hopeless or disappointed. Okay. There's a need for all those. As long as you're conscious, now I can make a decision on how I want to get those met. I want to get those met through my wife. That could be awesome. Do I want to get them met through another woman? Probably not as awesome. Do I want to get them met through what I'm eating? That's where the food epidemic comes from, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get myself to feel better. I'm trying to release endorphins to solve this pain that I'm feeling. So, you know, learning your needs becomes much simpler when you start to go body, soul, spirit.
Mm.
Body, soul, spirit. Then I can really sit down and go, is this coming from my soul or coming from my spirit? Or is this coming from my body? You know, if it's coming from my body and I treat it with my spirit, it doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm super tired and I don't sleep, but instead I pray a whole bunch, it's like, well, I feel really hopeless. Why do you feel hopeless? You feel hopeless because you haven't slept in 3 days.
Mm.
Well, go to sleep and see if that fixes it. Or, you know, I feel really disconnected from God, but instead of entering into worship and hearing his testimonies and getting hope, I go and I play video games. It's like, well, that didn't solve your problem, right? Video games is probably fine if you just need to check out and whatever, like for a couple hours, but it doesn't do it if it's in the spirit category. So anyways, when people are thinking about how to work through pain, set healthy boundaries, get your needs met, think body, soul, spirit, and you'll do a lot.
Yeah. It's so good because I think that, I mean, there can be a lot of pushback on like what it means to love yourself. But I think as you describe like meeting those needs and understanding those needs, like that to me sounds like love and compassion, you know, like taking care of, and if you take care of that, you actually become more loving to other people, you know?
Yeah.
So I love, thank you so much for sharing your story. Something that your dad says a lot is vision gives pain a purpose. And I think that the way that I've seen a lot of Christians process pain is get straight to the prophetic word, to it's going to be okay. And God's going to bring you another wife and it's going to be okay. And I think that that's important. And I think that's why having you on the podcast is such an honor, because you are giving people vision for like, hey, there's a way through this and it is going to work out for good. I mean, you ended up remarrying and having more children and have such a successful ministry. Because I think sometimes there can be a disconnection to the promises of God when you're in pain or, you know, band-aiding pain. But like you kind of mentioned a little bit about like God actually speaking to you in those moments. But what did creating vision for yourself, like, because when you're in it, you don't know that you're going to marry Lauren, You don't know that it's going to be okay, or that that pain is not going to have a sting every time you think about your first marriage. So what did authenticity and connecting to the promises and the hope of God look like in that, just to sort of wrap up the episode today?
Well, I think, you know, in processing pain, God would come down and he would answer a question that I had, which felt really caring.
Yeah.
And really loving, and felt like he knew me and he was with me. Mm. And I think it does two things. One, it gives you something to look forward to, and it gives you something to believe in, and it gives you immediate relief. Mm. The ultimate is, we can't live without hope. Mm. People don't function without hope.
Yeah.
And without hope, you don't get up and make your bed in the morning. Without hope, mm-hmm. you don't work a 40-hour week. Without hope, you don't plan ahead to have kids. You know, without hope, you don't invest. You don't build businesses. You don't do anything without hope. And so I just think that's, it's why it's one of the names for God, you know? He's our future and our hope. And so I really do. I think that that's a lot of what the world needs. And it's what a new election does, right? We go, oh, we don't want the old, we want the new. We want a new hope. So I think that that's what a lot of the processing pain and hearing God's voice and being authentic inside of it is. If you know me and you see me and you're giving me answers, what you're really giving me is you're giving me hope.
Yeah.
Saying somehow, some way, if I continue on, you know, this is going to work out. Those who sow with tears reap with joy. You know, it's the, I'm being led to a place where I won't lack anything. It's God's doing something big. It's the, you know, if your breakthrough hasn't come, then God's not finished, because he's the God of the breakthrough. It's all the things that we say and believe and do. It's hope. Hope is energy. It keeps us going.
Yeah, it's so powerful. And your story is so full of hope. And our audience can go check out your podcast with your wife, Lauren, Mates, Dates, and Babies. And you also have another podcast called Brave Co. Is that correct?
Yeah, for men. Yeah, so for men. Brave Co. podcast is just where we're dedicated to discipling men and giving them tons of tools. And we're actually, if there's guys on here, we have a discipleship course for men that's free. You can go to braveco.org and get our free discipleship courses, which are phenomenal. We've had thousands and thousands of guys go through it and get free from pornography and build healthy relationships and learn how to love their families. And it's awesome.
Yeah. A lot of my guy friends who go to your Brave Co conferences or have done your discipleship program, they live so radically free and unapologetic, and walk with such ownership of their story. And like, you can see they don't judge themselves. It's so powerful what you're doing. And my podcast is actually called The Next Brave Thing, because I would come out of counseling sessions and I'd be like, my next brave thing is I have to do this thing, or I have to confront this person, or I have to be vulnerable about this. And so just to wrap up this episode, what would be your next brave thing? What does courage look like for you now, Jason?
Oh, it's showing up every day.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. It does. You know, I got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and in businesses to grow and people to help. And every day I have to remind myself to show up, to give my all, to not back down, not make excuses. And that's easy. It's, you know, it's what half of me wants to do every day. So I think the hardest thing in my life isn't the one-off thing, you know, it's not the whatever. It's the showing up for my wife when she's feeling angry, and, you know, playing with my kids when I don't want to. And it's all that stuff. That's the hardest stuff in my life.
Yeah, for sure. So this is my last question. So why did you call your ministry or men's ministry Brave Co?
Yeah, it's short for Brave Company, and we're a brave company of men. You know, it's in order to build a life that you're proud of, you have to use so much courage and bravery.
Yes.
You just have to, because it's so easy to sacrifice what God wants to do in you so that he can do something through you for something safe and comfortable.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to sacrifice and to give that up. So
yeah, brave couple. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I've seen so much fruit from your life and for your courageous steps. And I highly encourage any wives who have husbands or boyfriends or just any guys in your life to check out braveco.com or .org. And we will have all of those details in the show notes. But yeah, thank you so much, Jason, for joining me. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.